welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is our second week back on KTTH.
Indeed.
We're glad to be here. For those of you who have not heard us before, welcome. And it is our objective to give you a new perspective on financial markets and what to do with managing your money, or at least explain why we don't use the standard modern portfolio theory, the industry best processes stinks.
Yeah,
when it comes
not,
to protecting capital.
Yeah. Not cracked up. It's not what it's cracked up to be, and we can show you a better way.
Well, that's certainly true. In fact, listening to the prior show, I'm sitting around here waiting for ours to start, they mentioned Ben Stein and the buckets of money, which was really popular back in the 2000s.
Had a pretty big run, yeah.
And he's absolutely right. The buckets of money was a good way to lose your money when the market tanks, because the best practices in the industry has no protection when the market crashes. Even in minor corrections like 20%, because if it doesn't get more than 20% down, it's still not a bear market. It's just a correction. And there's no protection. You have to have some other strategy, which is why we don't use best practices for portfolio construction, because most people we know don't want to lose the money that's in the stock market.
Funny how that works. Yeah, people don't talk about that when they hand you the pie chart, saying that, hey, you know what? Chances are pretty good you're going to be taking a huge hit at some point here, but we don't want to talk about that.
Well, yeah, and after all, the market always goes up. So
eventually,
it won't bother you as long as you don't need money when your account's in the hole.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on to other things. One, we're new here, you may not know that we do a monthly stock market update webinar on the first Saturday of every month. If you go to our website, iriradio.com, video tab, you'll find that we've been posting them regularly for about 2 years now. And the one that would be really interesting, if you wonder how do you get protection in a bear market, is go to iriradio.com, the video tab, and then scroll down through the videos to January of this year. And we walk you through how portfolio protection works and the huge difference it makes on the other end, because everybody knows you buy low and sell high. That's the way you make money in the market. But in order to make that actually work, you have to be willing to sell high when the market's tanking so you have cash to buy low. And most everybody does not do that, because your financial advisor says, well, the market always goes up.
Yeah.
And we've already, I mean, you answer these questions. We built a portfolio to protect you. Unless, of course, the market really drops hard, then, you know, it's all off the table. But they don't tell you that.
But if they had to do that pie chart, yeah, all they've got for you really is a couple of phone calls to try to keep you in the house. Don't move your money. It's all going to be okay eventually. There just happens to be no protection there for a significant downturn. You're going to take the hit. And surprisingly enough, that's the way it's supposed to work. That is their plan. Their plan is to let you lose all that money. We just don't think that's a good idea. If you're losing money, get rid of whatever that is until it's making money. That makes much more sense to us.
You want to stay up to date with us? We do a weekly, sometimes more than weekly, email. You can register for that by sending us an email, help@iriradio.com. put week in review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email. We set you up in constant contact, which makes it a one-click unsubscribe if you decide that you're going to be one of the very few people who unsubscribe from our distribution. We don't sell your email. It doesn't go anywhere. It'd be a violation of securities regulations. So it's as secure as we can make it. The market, however, has been somewhat unstable this last week. The Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell, spent 2 days in front of Congress, presumably giving them the testimony they want to hear so he gets renominated for another term.
Which that is important to him. Yeah, he does want to come back. So,
which if he doesn't, that could be really disruptive to the markets. Not that his testimony wasn't somewhat disruptive, discussing inflation and the low yields and dropping during the week as a result of his comments. He made some comments that were rather attention-getting. Egregious might be one way to describe them. For instance, quote, "The Fed should look at a current higher inflation as temporary unless it persists year after year."
That's almost funny. Yeah, it's like, seriously? It's going to be transitory unless it's not. Hey, thanks, Jerome. That cleared that up, didn't it?
And he described inflation as, by inflation, we mean year after year, prices go up. I'm sorry, but I didn't just get out of high school. I think that's how inflation works. Prices go up year after year, and this was supposed to be groundbreaking testimony. And then not finally. I've got two more points here out of this testimony. Housing. Have you noticed house prices are much more expensive than they were a few years ago? According to Chair Powell, housing is an asset. Price rising in housing is not inflationary. He just said that prices that rise year after year are inflationary, but if your house price rises year after year, that's not inflationary.
It's too inconvenient for them. Right now, it pushes that inflation number around too much because prices are increasing so rapidly. So let's just ignore that, seems to be the plan.
So it's a couple of decades back, the Fed took house prices out of the CPI. Because they were going up too fast and it was making CPI look really bad. So they created a rent equivalent. What would it cost to rent your house to live there instead of you owning your house? So that was a lower number. So they used that. But apparently if that goes up year after year, that's not inflationary either. And the used cars, if you've been out trying to buy a used car, or as my car dealer has been calling me, trying to buy mine, so I need to buy a new car. Car prices rose 10% last month, 25% year over year. But Mr. Powell says that we think there's going to be a multi-year shortage of used car in the United States, but it should be viewed as temporary inflation because it will resolve once the semiconductors show up from Japan and Taiwan. The car manufacturers will be able to ramp up production. So I agree. That one is probably temporary. And when they can get production back up, the rental car companies will finally be able to negotiate acquisition of new cars instead of buying used cars for the rental fleet.
Which is the problem with the used car prices. That's what's driving everything up. The problem with that whole scenario is if it's going to go on for 2 or 3 or more years, a lot of other things can happen in the meantime. So that's a really bold prediction that's just going to resolve itself and go away. In the current set of facts, it probably will, but just so many things can happen over that long period of time.
Well, since inflation is only important if it goes up year after year after year, I took a look at a couple of things. The commodity index, these are 5-year numbers. Over the last 5 years, commodity in a broad, which includes a lot of agricultural stuff, is up sevenfold. Well, Apparently, that's not inflationary.
there's zero chance that that is not inflationary. You know, that the commodities, that's the raw goods that are the input costs for, you know, everything we buy and sell here in the United States. So once those prices are increasing, the end user ends up paying for that, and that's inflationary, and that's a 5-year number. So that's not just based on what's happened in the last 18 months with the economy shutdown. That's 5 years. And it's still up dramatically.
Industrial metals, that's steel, copper, essentials for building, you know, multifamily plus single-family homes. It's not so bad. Over the last 5 years, those numbers have only doubled. Mm. No big deal. Lumber, the big news on lumber is that over the last, I think, 6-8 weeks, lumber prices have crashed 60%. What a relief that is, going from well over $1,000 for 1,000 feet of random length lumber, down 60%. But over the past 5 years, lumber prices on the futures market are still 57% higher than they were 5 years ago. And housing, housing, what's the big deal here? It's up 60% in 5 years. There is no inflation unless prices go up year after year.
I'd say and 5 years counts. Yeah, 5 years counts.
I think 5 years counts. That's
those
right.
Numbers. That's unreal. That's a lot of inflation. And once it sets in, you know, inflation is notoriously difficult to subdue once it gets a foothold. So I'm hoping to see some normalization of some of those numbers sooner than later, but there's nothing that guarantees that's going to happen, unfortunately.
Well, and employers are having a hard time finding employees who want to work.
Indeed,
so they're having to pay bonuses just to get people to fill out an application, to show up when they do get hired. And they are paying more money, trying to keep people, because people are quitting at a record rate, saying, I can get more money down the street.
Just
and in the hospitality business, 38% of people who were working in hospitality a year ago are saying, I'm never going back to that industry. I'm going to find a new job that pays better and has better hours.
And they are struggling. They are really struggling to bring people in the hospitality business in general, the restaurant business in particular. It is really tough going out there right now.
And we're up against
our break here, Don. We're going to have to get out of here. Take a brief time out. I'd like to remind everyone that we are live. We'd be happy to talk to you this afternoon. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Everything economics, fair game. We'll talk to you about the markets or the economy, or even give you a second opinion on any individual security you would like us to take a peek at. So again, feel free. Give us a call. 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at irradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine.
Well, investing has risk in it. It never goes always up. But that's the assumption that most retirement plans, financial plans, plans for paying for the kids' education, market always goes up. And the fact is that when people are told the market goes up over time, that's not a lie. That's true. It's just not the complete truth, because it also has extended periods of collapse and sometimes long periods of recovery. Last year was an absolute exception on both the downside and the upside. It was the fastest downside before a reversal, and it was the fastest recovery in stock market history. That is not normal. The 2008 and 9 market tank, a great financial collapse, was 7 years to get even. The tech bubble was almost 15 years to get even. Those are long periods of time without making any money and still having risk exposure along the way. What one needs to do is to have a process that leaves the market in downtrending markets to preserve cash. Now, there may actually be some assets that are going up, but they get hard to find. You have to rotate. Our principle is own leaders. When leaders quit leading, get out of them. Preserve capital. We subscribe to Warren Buffett's rule one. Never lose your money. And if you have rule one, there's bound to be rule two, which he does. Rule two is remember rule one. Don't lose money. Well, one of the things that has been losing money is the mutual fund industry. And I'm not talking about the stock prices going down. I'm talking about their revenues going down. They are mutual fund managers are finally waving the white flag.
It's been coming for years. We've been telling people for a long time. We've been using ETFs for years, exchange-traded funds, instead of mutual funds because they are significantly less expensive. They're much more transparent. You always know what's in them. A mutual fund, they only have to tell you four times a year what's in the fund. In an exchange-traded fund, you can look every day and make sure that fund manager is doing what they're supposed to be doing. And they trade like stocks. If you trade a mutual fund, it doesn't actually trade until after the market closes that day. So if you're trying to get out because the market is tanking, you can't. When you sell an ETF, it sells just like a stock. That transaction goes through immediately, and you get out whatever time of day you made the sale. So they're much better for us as far as managing money, and the truth is now being seen by everyone else. They're much better for everyone. And so the march is on out of mutual funds and into exchange-traded funds.
Well, and that's good for everybody. Even the 401k market is slowly addressing the issue of cost changing to exchange-traded funds.
Correct.
Yeah, there are some mutual funds that still serve a legitimate purpose and are cheap enough that they're competitive with ETFs. They are specialized index funds. So we're not saying mutual funds have no place to be in a portfolio, but you have to be really careful with the ones you're using. In any event, this shift is real, and it is something that you should see happening if you're in a 401k plan. We are advisors to corporate 401k plans, and we run a list of funds. We create the menu, and then we have five models that we run from a risk management standpoint. And if you'd like to know how we do that or what those look like, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put 401k models in the subject line and give us your first and last name, and we will send you the recent July update for all of our models, and you can see how they protected capital last year and how well they are doing this year. The stock market is an interesting issue because if you own stocks, you may be frustrated that you're not keeping up with the S&P 500. Well, like every index, they are, well, I'll say the major indices are cap weighted. That means that most of the activity reflects the biggest stocks in the index. So recently, and the better part of last year, the indexes were moving up while the broad market was struggling. So recently, the leadership has gone from 10 stocks to 5 stocks.
How about that? How's that for a narrow market? That's what's moving things in general, 5 stocks in the S&P 500.
And that there's a number of factors. One of the things that's happened with, say, J.P. Morgan and the other major bank stocks, their investment bankers, is that they have passed their risk test. So the Fed's letting them reinstate dividends and reactivate stock repurchases. Now, stock repurchases are good for you as a shareholder because they reduce the number of shares that are outstanding. That means corporate profits are divided among fewer people, which means that your earnings are rising, which, by the way, also helps management get bigger paychecks.
They wouldn't do a stock buyback just to increase their salary, would they, Don? Would they really do that?
Well, we found out, in fact, they were doing that prior to the pandemic.
You bet
because when the pandemic came, a lot of them went to Congress and said, hey, we don't have enough cash to stay in business. We need a loan, because they'd been spending their money buying very expensive stock to keep their, well, it looked like to keep their bonuses going.
That was at least part of the decision. Yeah, it wasn't just for the benefit of the shareholder. They were looking at their own bottom line and saying, hey, I get compensated by the change in the stock price. I need to keep this thing up. So let's just reduce the number of the shares out there and float this thing a little further along.
There were some companies that actually did this responsibly according to proper finance theory, and that is when you have a high stock price, that's when you sell more stock to raise capital and build up your bank account. So when hard times come and business is tougher, you have a bigger bank account to survive
it. Cash, sir. Yeah.
Don't have to borrow money. And there were some companies that did that. Tesla did that. The stock price was running up, and they said, hey, we'll take the money. And they did. They sold more shares. There were a couple others. AMC.
AMC did it. AMC said, hey, we're going to periodically sell some shares. If we were you, we probably wouldn't buy them, but it seems like you guys want them, so we're going to sell them anyway. And they did.
Well, and they did that with a special offering that said, we're on the verge of bankruptcy. We're not sure it's smart to buy our shares, but since you want them, we're going to let you have as much as you will take.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the world of getting what you wished for. And now we'll see if that's a good thing or not. Oof.
So I mentioned J.P. Morgan just a minute ago. J.P. Morgan has their finger on the economy. They know what's going on, and they report that spending on debit and credit cards is up 45% from prior year and 22%, this is actually more important, from 2019, that's second quarter of 2019. How would they know? J.P. Morgan. Well, they own Chase. Do you have a Chase bank account, credit card, debit card? Yep.
A lot of
they
people do.
Keep track of what you're doing.
They do. They have their. They've got all of your information, and as far as they're concerned, the consumer is ready to begin spending. Everything is. Everything's in the right place. Everybody's home value is up. If you own a house, stock values are up. If you own stocks, incomes are increasing. Everybody's been putting away a little more money, so savings are up, and everybody's feeling good about what's going on out there right now. So as far as J.P. Morgan Chase is concerned, the consumer is ready to make a significant addition to the economy at large.
Yeah, so from the banking perspective, I mean, they're looking at really good times. However, the stocks aren't doing well.
Right.
When we are completely out of the financial stocks. We do not have them in our portfolio.
They're just not moving, yeah.
Well, they're moving the wrong way.
Yep.
But home loans are up 64% over last year. Auto loans are up 61%. That's interesting because with autos selling at premium prices, it apparently is not deferring people. They are spending their money. You need a car. You want a car. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of choice. Waiting around and discounting one, not so much. The bargaining for a new car below manufacturer's suggested price, pretty hard to do
now,
in a day when there's a shortage.
If you don't buy it, there's somebody standing right behind you that will. So the dealers are having a good time right now getting exactly what they want for their product.
So that changes the way the market works. And when that happens, one of the things that's happening is, and again, back to Powell's testimony in Congress this last week, is that the market's rotating again. It's been a wishy-washy, we call it a whipsaw market. It looks like you have leadership in one area because we're going to have inflation. And then we're not. So if you're not going to have inflation, there's different kind of sectors in the market that should do well in a non-inflationary environment that don't do well in an inflationary environment. So Mr. Market is somewhat confused right now.
Having trouble.
Things are trying to figure out, does Powell know what he's really doing? Is the Congress actually going to pass another $3.5 trillion on their way to the $6 trillion they started with? Nobody knows. Well, frankly, if they do pass the $3.5 trillion, which Mr. Manchin's decided he's going to throw in his towel and stay a friend within the party, makes it a little more likely, but still not certain that this is going to pass. That is a deflationary legislation. You can't keep adding all the debt we have and not create a drag on the economy. Debt used properly in the free market can stimulate the economy. And that's what banks do when they loan you money. They give you money that you create a project for, and that's money that you didn't have. That expands the money supply. The Fed expanding the money supply doesn't do that. The Fed, in quotes, prints money. It's not really what they're doing, but that's how we refer to it. They print money and give it to the banks, and the banks look around and say, well, we don't need all that. Nobody lining up at the front door to borrow it that I like. We'll just give it back to the Fed and earn a little bit of interest. So the money's gone from the Fed bank to the institutional banks who have put it back on deposit in the Fed. So yes, the money supply has increased, but it's not going anywhere.
It never got into the economy. So it's not expanding the money supply. It's not chasing goods and services. So on the good side, it's not inflationary. On the bad side, it's also not expanding the economy at all. And it's just an accounting game they're playing right now, trying to tread water until they can see some real directions here. We are at the bottom of the hour here, Don. Time for us to get out of here, take a quick break. I'd like to remind everyone our next market update's coming up Saturday, August 7th, 9:15 in the morning. You can sign up for that by just going to IRIRadio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Go to the webinar page, and there's a registration link there. Just give that a click, and you'll get an email back with a link in it. And on August 7th, you just click that link. And you'll be live online with us, and you'll be able to see our screen, see the charts we're talking about, see what it is that we think is going on out there in the market. And we always have plenty of time for your questions. If you'd like to get a second opinion on anything in your portfolio or something you're thinking about adding, it's a great time to do that. So, again, August 7th, 9:15, and you can register at IRIRadio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, we've been in a long bull market, disrupted last year with a relatively short bear market. And I mentioned earlier that market tends to go up over time is not a lie. But it also, if you're relying on that, can destroy all your plans. Because if you retire at the beginning of a bear market, everything's out the window.
That changes everything. It really does put a big hole in your portfolio, and it's very difficult to recover from that.
So what the majority of investors lack is an actual disciplined process to exit the market when stuff isn't working. Diversification has been the theory of risk management. And that came from the mutual fund industry. We're a mutual fund. We invest in growth stocks, and we own 432 growth stocks, and we keep track of them. So we're diversified. Or you have a general purpose fund. Income Fund of America is one of those. It owns growth. It owns value. It owns dividend stocks. I mean, it owns technology. It owned all the parts of the market. It owned everything. So the theory is if you own a little bit of everything, some stuff goes up and some stuff goes down, and on balance, it'll be okay. Until, of course, you have a bear market, and then not so much. And we've been trained in that. We're both certified financial planners. We're both accredited investment fiduciaries. We understand the theory, which really is a sales talk, because the theory was not built to be applied to portfolio construction. It was a doctoral dissertation for which Harry Markowitz got a Nobel Prize many, 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 many years later. It was designed to identify volatility, but not to be, as in his own words, it is not being used properly by the financial services industry.
Like I said, Don, it's morphed into a gigantic a sales pitch. And, you know, they're always telling you, you know, you should anticipate 8, 9, 10% returns forever with this pie chart portfolio. And, you know, Harry Markowitz, when he wrote Modern Portfolio Theory, stated flatly, there's no predictive value in this math at all. There's none. He always hoped to find that. He thought with the advent of less expensive computing power, they were going to find the formula that was going to allow them to predict where the market was going. Never happened. There is none. And yet they're still going to tell you, here's what you're going to make for the next 50 years in this portfolio. And it's just not true.
Yeah, that holy grail remains elusive.
Indeed it does. We've looked.
Well, we have. And the financial collapse back in 08, 09,
yeah,
that was disastrous for everybody across the board. And in the aftermath of that, we're in the front office standing around. There are three of us, all CFPs, and we're saying, there's something wrong here. This isn't supposed to happen. You read all the financial textbooks, take all the tests we did. This is not supposed to happen. And yet even major firms, professional Wall Street firms, are losing money. It's just like Ben Stein on the TV saying, well, I'm okay. We only lost 40%. Most people lost 50. Well, yeah, but if you're just getting ready to retire, 40%'s a hit. I mean, you got $500,000 and now it's three. What happens to your income? Well, are you going to reduce your standard of living 40% to make that work?
I tell you, we don't ever want to be on the phone to a client explaining why they lost 40% of their money and we think we did well. That just doesn't make any sense when you think about it. It's like that is not fair. It shouldn't happen that way. And that is the way that pie chart is supposed to work. That is not a problem. That's a feature. That's the way it's supposed to work. It's just not good enough.
So what happens when the financial advisor makes that call? Or actually, he's not making the call. You're probably calling him and he's trying to explain how good a job he did losing only 40% of your account. Is you fire that financial advisor and you go down the street and you hire another one who, unbeknownst to you, is going to say, oh, well, that was terrible. He had you in all the wrong funds or ETFs. You need to be in the ones I choose. And he's going to use the same model that put you in that position in the first place. It's just now you're starting at a lower point, and so any recovery looks like he's doing a better job. But the risk that's inherent in it remains the same.
It does.
You need a process that actually tells you this market isn't working and it is time to remove piece by piece. Not we don't have a signal that says get in or get out of the market. We look at components of the market. We're looking at sectors and macro data, and it's piece by piece. This piece isn't working. You should no longer own it. Can you find anything worthwhile to buy? Pretty hard right now because prices are so expensive. So what do? If you can't find something attractive to buy, you hold your cash until you can buy low. You can at least buy reasonably cheap. And if it doesn't go up, do you hang on? What if it starts to go down?
Yeah. You just can't stay there. You can't stay in a losing position for years and years, which is what happens with that pie chart, and just keep, well, what happens is if something's losing money, you end up just buying more and more of it. You sell the winners, you buy the losers, and that's the way they reallocate. That's the way they rebalance. That's how that happens inside the portfolio. So you end up having to spend more money on the things going down and selling the things that are doing well, all under the theory that, well, at some point they're going to reverse. And we don't know when that's going to be, but we have to be holding them or we're going to miss it. We're going to miss the whole thing. And that's just not the case. You can follow the money. You can watch the market move. Rarely does it happen overnight. That's the lightning doesn't always strike and the market tanks. You can watch it begin to weaken. And then you need to take action and say, you know what, we've got to sell this part of our portfolio. And there's nothing that's worth buying right now. Nothing is worth the risk of putting client dollars back to work right now. So we're just going to wait. And we have no problem holding cash. We know we're not going to hold it forever. We don't hold it. We don't go to cash just to stay there. And we don't go to cash to make money. We go to cash just to stay out of the way. That's the lifeboat. That's where you go hang out and wait for the dust to settle and then see where the cash is flowing and then step back in. But you have to be able to step out of the way. Otherwise, the market's going to roll over you every time there's a downturn.
And if you've suggested that that's what should be done to your financial advisor, they're going to tell you that, well, if you get out of the market at the top, you're lucky. You'll never get back in at the bottom, and you're going to miss the best days of recovery, the best days of the market. You're
all
going
the time
to miss
they
those.
Say that, yeah.
So you got to stay in, and that's true. The best days of the market occur at the very bottom after you've lost your shirt. What they don't tell you is that if you avoid the worst days of the market and have cash at the bottom, you can be late getting in and still be way ahead. And if you'd like some evidence to that effect, go to our website, iriradio.com, click on the video tab, and scroll down till the January of this year webinar. Watch the January market update. We explain month by month how the market mandated protecting capital, and you'd make a market-generated data decision, not guessing that you think things are going to turn bad. We don't know how to guess the future because nobody knows it. But missing the best days in the market is not as important as protecting your capital through the worst days of the market. If you don't have, you think you don't have time to watch that video and learn how market generated information can be a major benefit, then send us an email, help@iriradio.com, put 401k report in the subject line and your first and last name in the body of the email, and we'll send you our current report for our 401k plan participants, and it will explain what we do and how all the portfolios performed last year and how they're performing this year. It in itself is an education. It's an eye opener.
It
That's
really
what
is.
It is.
Yep. It really points out the difference between what happens if you're working with a pie chart advisor and they don't care about what's going on in the market, and someone who's watching what's going on and making those adjustments as the market unfolds, as it reveals itself to us, because we never make a bet with your money. We never predict what's going on. We wait for it to move, and then we follow that trend, and it makes all the difference in the world.
Wow, this is live call-in radio. We're live. We never have a recorded show. If you want to talk to us today, it's 800-465-8770. But maybe you want to talk to us during the week. You're a little radio shy. We have a phone number for that, too. It's 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. That's during the week. Get a chance to talk to us. We'll talk to you on the phone. If you want to see stuff that we actually do, we can set up a GoToMeeting with you. We'll share our screen on your computer. You can interview us. You don't even have to come in the office. We do it online. We've been doing this stuff online for years. It's just pandemic wasn't new to us.
We were just way ahead of the curve, yeah, with the work from home and work online. But if you do want to see us in person, I don't think that's any longer illegal. So I think we can meet face to face. Even we can arrange that for you if you'd like to. Just let us know. Again, that number is 800-317-9119. We are up against our last break of the day here. We have a full segment left. We have plenty of time to get your questions up. If you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to talk to you. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Lone Ranger.
Well, Lone Ranger Rides Again is somebody that Chairman Powell would probably like to see showing up on the horizon.
Wouldn't you love to see him wearing a mask? Dude, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. How about that? Well, Lone Ranger started the mask deal. He's just wearing over his eyes. And you know, in any event, Powell has to be somewhat concerned over this inflation data, because 48% of small businesses are planning on raising their prices. This is a 40-year high. And yet, in the midst of all this, the used car deal, that'll probably go away, but it's only 3% of the inflation pressure. There's a lot of other stuff that's doing that. Consumers are buying stuff even though prices are higher. Right. They're not objecting because there's not that many choices to go elsewhere. And Chairman Powell, and I mentioned some of his statements are almost egregious. I think this is one of them. quote, even if higher inflation persists, I expect the Fed will not act quickly.
Correct.
Well, Congress wanted to hear that.
Yeah, well, that is consistent with what he said before. They've been trying to get some inflation for a decade now, and now it's finally here. And like he said, we're going to let the economy run hot for a little while, if it will. It just got a lot hotter a lot quicker than they thought. So I think even there, I'm wondering exactly where that inflation number is going right now.
So basically, after telling us for a long time that this inflation is transitory, the Fed is admitting maybe not so much. And if it is, we're not going to do much about it either. So, but they're in a box. When you look at what their mandates are, they're supposed to create a stable currency and high employment.
Correct.
Well,
right.
If inflation's a problem, the way you deal with it is you raise interest rates to slow things down. In this environment, they're going to slow the economy and kill employment. They are painted into a corner, and there's no easy way out of it. At some point in time, the market is going to correct itself. This cannot continue at this rate indefinitely.
Right.
It can continue longer until finally people realize the king doesn't have any clothes on.
And that's when things start to happen. And I think that may be just a recognition by Chairman Powell that there's really not a lot they can do. This is going to work itself out. We're in a situation where we've never been before. I mean, the last 18 months are completely unprecedented in the economic world. No one knows what effects this is going to have. And it's going to take a while to work out a bunch of the imbalances that are out there right now. And there's no way to hurry it up. And there's no way to know who the winners and losers are going to be yet.
If the inflation news isn't messed up enough for you, how about looking at the way that stocks and bonds work?
Yeah. I mean,
the whole theory of stock and bond portfolio is that when stocks go down, bonds go up, and your portfolio loss is less. It's not avoided. It's less. Bonds don't fall as fast. However, if we go back into the last couple of bear markets last year, 2018, well, it wasn't a bear market. It missed breaking 20%. It was only 19 and a fraction
down.
It
didn't quite hit 20. That's right.
And then the GFC, the great financial collapse that in 7, 8, 9, bonds went down the same time stocks went down. Gold went down right along with it. In fact, in the 08, 09 market, the relationship between assets that were supposed to diversify risk, they all did the same thing. They all collapsed. Yep. It was everybody running for the exit. It was like being in a theater and the fire alarm goes off. There's only two aisles and two doors and everybody's running for them. Somebody's going to get trampled. And that's exactly what happened when these correlations or relationships fall apart. And if you're using bonds in your portfolio as your risk diversifier, you have to think about this. Why are they there? Well, they're there because interest rates have been falling for nearly 40 years, and falling interest rates, while they're no good if you want to buy a CD, are good for bonds. They make bonds worth more money. So when you build a standard best practices portfolio, and most people end up in 60 stocks, 40 bonds, balanced account.
Almost everyone ends up there, yeah.
Bonds have an average return of about 5.5% to 7%. And so you say, okay, that looks good to me. I'll go ahead and give you my money. Well, you're assuming that your bond portfolio is going to generate 5 to 7% over the next 40 years, whatever of that 40 you remain alive. How do you think that's going to happen? Raising interest rates to get a 5 or call it 6% return is going to kill your bond value. It's going to collapse. So you're assuming that interest rates will fall 90% from today's level of 1.5.
Not too likely. We don't ever have anyone raise their hand and say, yeah, we think that's going to happen. We think interest rates are going to fall 90% from where they are now. And that's a way that pie chart paints your portfolio into a corner. The return average over the last 30 years is 5 to 7%, but you're not going to get that going forward. But there's no way to adjust for that inside that portfolio. You're gonna crank that in as if it's going to occur. And right now, mathematically, it can't occur, but it's still going to end up in your portfolio. So you end up with more risk with no chance of hitting that return number.
So do we not like bonds?
No. We don't like bonds right now, no.
Well, we don't like them right now, but we do when they're making money.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. If bonds are leaders in the marketplace, you want them in your portfolio. When they quit leading, they should come out. Because when they're losing money, why do you have them in your portfolio? You want to own losers. That's what you've been conditioned to do. Sell your winners, buy your losers. It's called rebalancing your portfolio. This makes so much sense to not hang on to winning positions.
And put more money into the losing positions over time. Like I said earlier, all in the theory that that's all going to reverse itself at some point, and it very well may. It's just that you might lose money for a decade before it does. That's the part that doesn't make any sense. The only safety in a pie chart portfolio is time. You have to have an unlimited amount of time for it to work for you. And in the meantime, it could completely ruin your chances of hitting a goal for, you know, your kid's college education or your retirement. It can completely pull the rug out from under those plans. And the only thing you can do is just wait it out. And if it takes 25 years, it takes 25 years. You just have to wait. And we don't think that's good enough. People, human beings, we don't have that kind of time. We don't have time frames like that, especially if we're in retirement. And that's our means of making it through retirement. You can't just tell someone, well, if you wouldn't mind not spending any of that retirement money you saved up over your entire life, you know, give us 10, 15 years, and then you can start spending it again. That's not realistic. It's not going to happen that way.
So in the industry standard diversified portfolio, the assumptions for bear market is once in 500 years, but we've had 18 of them since the 1920s. You've had more than one in your own lifetime. In your investment lifetime, you've seen more than one bear market, except the model that most financial advisors use, the statistical part of the model. Says bonds only occur once every, or bear markets only occur once every 500 years. And when Janet Yellen testified in the last couple of years in front of Congress, she actually said that. She told Congress, we're not going to have another financial collapse like last year in 500 years.
We're fine now. Everything's okay. We've already had it, and now it's not going to happen again. And that's just not the truth. That's the difference between academia and reality. You can look at the numbers and run the statistics and say, well, the odds are it's not going to happen for 500 years. And it's like, well, in reality, it happens, you know, much, much more often than that. And we're going to be exposed to that no matter what the statistics say.
And so what do you have as a plan to deal with it?
Indeed.
Janet Yellen's plan apparently is it ain't going to happen. She's just going to close her eyes. And when you take a look at the people in Congress, the people at the Fed, the people at the Treasury being Janet Yellen, they have enough money that if the market's down 40%, it doesn't affect their lifestyle, but I bet it will yours. Do you have a plan that actually says, I'm going to protect capital? You need a plan based on a process, a disciplined process, evaluating market-generated data that protects capital so that you can buy low and sell high. Everybody knows you're supposed to do that. Most financial planners, financial advisors, do not have a process to do that. If you have a portfolio that's broadly diversified, you have a bunch of different money managers, because a lot of financial advisors actually don't manage the money. They look like it. They hire other big firms and say, well, we'll let them manage your growth money. We'll let them manage your bond money. We'll let them manage your value dividend stocks. We'll put some of this money over here in a non-liquid real estate commodity asset. We're going to give somebody else your option money. Yeah, but they're not managing your money. They're throwing your stuff at the wall and hoping something works.
Correct.
That's not a process to protect capital. That's a process to generate income for the advisor. Why are you doing that?
If they're not going to be ready to go to cash and get out of the way, then they're not prepared to protect your capital. So often, that's the only safe place. Like you said, Don, in 2007 and 2008, everything went down together. Stocks, bonds, gold, silver, real estate, everything went down, but not cash. So just get out of the way for a minute. take a breather, let the market find some direction, and then step back in the same way you got out. It's really not that complicated. It's just that they don't want to do the work to do that.
So to find out more about how that actually happens, go to our website, irradio.com, irradio.com. Go to the video tab. Watch some of the videos. I'd recommend you start with January of this year. But every one of them are different. They are all educational. They are not a sales pitch. You are going to learn something about the market. We're out of time. God bless you and God bless America. And Lord willing, we'll be back next week. You have a great weekend.